We're going to continue to move on to proposals number 11 on the agenda, river otter trapping and hunting season. I know we have our wildlife deputy director, Chad Switzer, is with us. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the commission, Secretary Rowling, Chad Switzer here. I think to kick this off, Alex Solomar, senior wildlife biologist, has a shared information presentation here on river otters. If you want, Alex.
Yeah. Thank you very much, members of the commission, Secretary Roebling. Chris, if you want to pull up my presentation here, I'll give you guys a little update the monitoring efforts that we do for river otters that we've been doing for some of the things we've been doing for roughly, 20 years plus, and some things are relatively new. So I'll kind of give you a short overview of that. As Chad mentioned, I'm Alex Solm. I'm your senior upland game biologist. So go ahead, Chris. So most importantly, obviously we just kicked off a river otter season I think this was the third year that we've had it. Kind of just a little quick overview of it. Fur bearer license holders are allowed to harvest one otter per season per license holder. We have a 20 otter harvest limit. The season begins November 1st and ends on December 31st, or whenever that harvest limit is reached, whichever comes first. Trappers have a 24-hour reporting time or 24-hour allotment to report harvested otter to myself, where we have this live dashboard on our website to let the constituents know, how close we are to this harvest limit. They have five days after that point when they talk to me to go check in their otter, where we take the detached carcass and they receive a CITES tag for their pelt. Last year, our season ended on November 15th and a total of 21 otters were harvested after a 24-hour grace period where we allow folks to go check their traps and that sort of stuff, because it's not like a normal hunting season where, you can just cut it off and end it. You give folks an opportunity to go check their traps and pull them and that sort of stuff. So you want to advance, Chris? So first and foremost, river otters are really hard to monitor. They're simply just not as easy to count as deer or pheasants. They're secretive in nature. They live in hard to reach places. Just the habitat that they live in is difficult to get to. So to properly manage otters, you can advance, Chris. Biologists must use multiple tools to really develop inferences on how their populations are doing. In South Dakota, we generally use three main methods, and there's some offshoots of those that we use to get population inferences. First and foremost, we do implement a harvest survey. We harvest, this year we just implemented an overall harvest survey that we sent out to every fur bearer license holder, asking a few questions. We also survey those successful trappers, take in how many traps that they actually placed with the intention to catch otters, if they tried to catch an otter, how many, kind of come up with the catch per unit effort, so number of trap nights that it took to actually be successful in trapping an otter. We also take in opportunistic reports, so these include signs, sightings, and then also incidental catches, which would be outside of the season or, meaning to catch a beaver during a beaver trapping season, also roadkill. So we record all that information plus a location. And that can give us inferences on distribution, abundance, and even with our necropsies of individuals that are dead, we can get sex, reproductive status, kind of some pretty cool information that we do take necropsies and try to age every single otter that we do get from those incidental catches. And we can do kind of an age at harvest estimate that I'll go through before the end of the presentation. We also implemented a stream survey 2 years ago. Actually, we started in 2001 and we're trying it until 2025, looking at the logistics behind it. I'll go into a little bit more detail here later in the proposal, but the stream survey is using non-genetic sampling, where we actually locate otter latrines, take a sample from the scat or other fluids that they leave behind, and try to come up with an index to abundance from that. So go ahead, Chris. First and foremost, harvest, the three main things that we look at are sex ratio, age ratio, and then also those traps per unit effort. You can see here over the 3 years of harvest, we had a relatively even sex ratio. Nothing crazy has changed from year to year, which indicates that we've kind of had a balanced harvest. If one of those male or females happen to, you know, tilt one way or the other, that might indicate that something's happening in the population. Same thing with our adult or with our age ratio. As you can see here, it's been relatively stable over the last 3 years that we've had it. Again, maybe if we're taking more adults than juveniles, we know that reproduction might not be happening, or vice versa. If we take more juveniles than adults, you know, we're maybe targeting that older population that, you know, a lot of the reproduction occurs. We also look at average trap nights per successful otter harvested there. You can see here, 2022 is kind of an outlier. I mean, we had a pretty early winter when it came to South Dakota. So there's a little bit of noise in the data. Obviously, when you're looking at trapper effort, you have to take into account what the weather was during the season. You know, what's the desire to actually go out there and trap an otter? And then not to mention fur prices as well. You know, in trapping communities, that drives a lot of the effort that goes out to trapping. And if something might not be worth a lot of money for fur, there might not be the desire to actually go out there and catch it. Go ahead, Chris. So like I mentioned in, you know, the previous slides, these are our river otter observations from 1998 to present. You can see a good distribution throughout much of the range of South Dakota. Get my notes here. Again, this information shed light on not only distribution, but we also get reports of reproduction if multiple otters are seen in a location. Also the frequency of reports. We can also use this as a gauge for population abundance. Obviously, if we're getting more reports throughout the years, it might indicate that population is increasing and becoming more common with folks reporting it. And it's kind of ironic. Commissioner Locken actually told me he saw an otter a couple weeks ago, so I actually put in a report here right before the meeting started, so we added another one to that map. So go ahead, Chris. So looking at our opportunistic reports, we do classify the validity of these reports. You know, we try to get verified reports, which means either confirmed by a photo or had a GFP person that has, you know, expertise in otter, is familiar with otter, go out there and actually confirm that this is what it was. A lot of folks, you know, if you've ever seen tracks on a mud bank or anything like that, a lot of times those tracks can get very distorted based on how the weather is happening, what the temperature is, how, what the substrate. So we want to make sure that what we're actually seeing out there is otters throughout the years, or otter in particular. And as you can see from, you know, when we started collecting these observations, we have seen a steady increase over the, you know, last few years, especially in our verified, which again is the metric that we use in that river otter management plan to justify their delisting. Go ahead, Chris. So here again, I kind of mentioned incidental catches. Again, incidental catches are generally harvests that are taken outside of the season framework. So GFP, that individual has to report it to a conservation officer, and they actually submit the carcass to us. We can report a location. You know, if they're targeting or not targeting otter, but what species they're actually targeting, what traps they're using, trying to gain as much information as we possibly can. Again, here you can see through time, we have seen a steady increase. Obviously, there's going to be some outliers in there and a little bit of noise in the data just based on, again, what fur prices are, what the, you know, intention of species that they were trying to trap, all that sort of stuff. Generally, most of our incidentals do happen during beaver trapping season or when that fur is prime. Beavers and otters really go hand in hand when it comes to their habitat use. Go ahead, Chris. So this is kind of a cool exercise that, you know, we've used with some of that age data that we get from those necropsied individuals. We refer to this as population backdating. So again, we pull a lower canine from every single dead otter that we get, and we take a necropsy from, we send it off to a lab. They're able to look at the cementum annuli, and that can give us an age of what that individual is. So what this graph represents is a cumulative total of otters through time based on what their age is. So for instance, if I have an otter that was harvested this year that was 5 years old, I know it contributed to the population size the previous 4 years, including this year. And then what this graph represents is a cumulative total of those otters through time, and it gives us a good idea of what the population trajectory is. And you can see here that it has been increasing. I will note that red box that I did put on there, you do see a steep decline. That's actually just because we have to ignore that portion of the data. Basically, any otter that's alive today is not contributing to this data set. However, they do have the opportunity to be sampled in the future. So there's about 4 to 5 years there, you know, From say 2023 back to 2018 that we just have to kind of ignore, and we look at the trends, previous to that breakout. Go ahead, Chris. So one of the main tasks that we had again with our river otter management plan was developing a long-term monitoring project, and this included a latrine survey. So in 2021, we developed this project using non-invasive genetic sampling. We focused on the Big Sioux River because we knew that was generally where a lot of our reports are coming from, as well as what we kind of thought maybe our highest abundance of otters were going to be. That's where they were released, and we knew that, obviously they were spreading, throughout that river system based on historical reports. So we identified 23 separate transects that you can call. They're located on the river, generally put in on a bridge, float down the river with kayaks using two observations. Each person searches the side of the bank for a latrine. And I kind of forgot to mention, for those that don't know, a latrine is basically a communal bathroom site for otters. They use it to go to the bathroom, as well as kind of a phone booth per se, where they can kind of communicate through scent and that sort of stuff. So there will be, multiple scats at these latrines or other types of bodily fluids that river otters use. And we search these in September, these transects in December through October, looking for the sign and kind of finding characteristics where we think these latrines would be. And then, go ahead, Chris. Once we actually find these latrines, we get out, we swab them using some supplies supplied by the University of Idaho. We swab every single individual scat or bodily fluid that's there that we suspect to be river otters, send it off to a lab in Idaho. And what they do is they do a genetic analysis on it, run through it using frequencies of alleles and all that sort of stuff. And they send back a spreadsheet that tells me how many individual otters that we actually sampled within those transects. This gives us a kind of an index to abundance, so number of otters per kilometer of stream that we are actually sampling. We did develop this stream survey, not only just to give us this population index, but also for future monitoring efforts. So there's an opportunity here where we can actually do mark recapture studies with it and come up with some sort of abundance estimate. We only have 1 year data. We've done 2 years of monitoring. So we're still kind of waiting on that. And that's definitely the beginning season or beginning stages, but the opportunity is certainly there. Go ahead, Chris. So this is just an idea of what we've actually done for surveying. So the last couple of years, we've been able to survey every single transect. We've detected latrines on 14 of our 26 or 23 transects, excuse me. We found 36 latrines in 2021, 43 in 2022. We were able to collect in the last 2 years almost 200 samples. And like I said, I don't have the results back for 2022. I'm hoping to get it back by the end of June. But last year we were able to locate 31 individual otters that gave us an index of approximately 0.28 otters per kilometer. Go ahead, Chris. We do have another kind of cool opportunity collaboration with South Dakota State University. Researchers, Dr. Amanda Cheeseman and Jeff Spicer, who's a master's student on this, is looking at the impacts of land use and management practices on North America and river otter distribution, habitat use, and population trajectory. So basically what they're doing is they're putting camera traps out throughout eastern South Dakota, looking at distribution of otters, what habitat use they're doing, and they're going to do an analysis in some sort of occupancy framework. This is obviously help us with distribution, likely of occurrence in some areas, all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of a pretty cool project. I don't have too much information on it yet. The student just started it last year. She's doing her second year of field season this year. So it's still in the beginning stages, but, hopefully once that project's all said and done, she might be able to come up here and present to you folks on what her findings are. Go ahead, Chris. And as you can see, she's been successful at it. So where that red dot is, she was able to successfully take a picture of an otter. That's just one occurrence, but I know she has to go through roughly 2 million pictures and train AI to locate, anything that sticks out in the picture and all that sort of stuff. So it's a pretty labor-intensive project. So it's probably going to take her a little bit to go through these pictures. and obviously hopefully get some pretty interesting results. So with that, that's all I have for you guys on River Otter monitoring update. And I'll entertain you if you any questions if anybody has any.
Fascinating. Any questions for Alex? Commissioner?
I was wondering, on your graph there, it showed, from 2000 on up on how many there were unintentionally caught, like beaver trapping and whatever. Do you have any numbers on that, on how much of an increase it was? It looked like it kept going up.
We get, on average, we get about 17 incidentals a year. Again, that definitely changed. You can see there roughly in, say, 2016, we have about 20, and it kind of bounces back and forth. A lot of times that does have to deal with ice conditions. You know, if we have an early fall, even though folks might be targeting beaver and they could have the opportunity for an incidental catch, they just can't get to it because everything's ice covered and the beaver trapping season is fairly limited. But we do average roughly 17 incidentals per year. 2021 was a little anomaly. We had a pretty mild winter, and I think folks were able to trap beaver longer and that sort of stuff. So,
like trying to get counts and stuff on them now, I was told Big Sioux River is very hardly running. I mean, is that going to have an effect on doing some of your surveys and that?
We've actually done it the last 2 years, and certainly the water is low, but I think that actually kind of helps us because essentially, all the wetlands and stuff like that, they obviously are going to use the river as a source for food, a place to live, all that sort of thing. It has been a little challenging. We've had staff in kayaks that we've had to walk, roughly a mile out of the 3 miles that we're doing it, pulling a kayak behind us. It hasn't affected our sampling at all. It just makes things a little bit harder. But even last year, we were still able to locate a good number of transects and take a good number of samples. So it hasn't influenced our data that we've collected at all. It just makes things a little more difficult to collect.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Commissioner Beast.
Mr. Beast, so when you go to these sites and take your samples, can you determine how many different animals are using that site by the samples you're taking?
So we are doing that by the number of individuals that we get per site. We can't use the number of scats and the number of samples that we take per se as an index to it because, there could be just one otter that really likes going back to that one location and uses it all the time. So that's why we don't just use the number of scats as an index to what our abundance might be. That's why we actually take the genetics from it and determine how many individuals were particularly using it.
And then what are you finding on there? Do they have a primary type of fish they like to prey on, or fish and fish to them?
I think fish is fish to them. We've, it's kind of funny when we've been seeing it, we've seen, feeding sites off of these latrines, maybe a couple hundred yards down the shore, and, we'll see a dead carp on the shoreline, and it's like, on that one bend in the river, I could bet the farm that there's going to be an otter latrine there, and sure enough, there is. And it seems like any slow moving fish that they can catch, I mean, they're going to take the easy meal, for that. And a lot of times it does end up being like carp and bullhead because they get trapped in pools. Those are the easy ones to catch.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Secretary.
Thank you, Alex, for the good presentation. I had a quick question on habitat suitability index and just kind of elaborate a little more on the 0.28 river otters per square kilometer. What does that mean? I mean, what does that mean to you as biologists, and where can that number potentially go based on the habitat suitability that we do have in South Dakota?
So right now we are using it just as an index to abundance. I don't know what the number means per se right now because we don't have anything to compare it to. It is going to be a little difficult to extrapolate that number onto the Big Sioux because we know these populations are isolated based on prey availability, the territories come into play as well. So right now it's just kind of baseline information that we're collecting with the hopes that a mark recapture study could probably be done for a more robust analysis.
Any other questions or comments? Commissioner Beast.
Can you go back to the slide of observation sites?
What was that?
Were those the observation sites just to see if there was something there, or were they actually detected at those spots?
This map that you're referring to?
Mm-hmm.
So these are opportunistic reports from either our staff or the general public. So they just so happened to be at the right place at the time, saw an otter, saw what they suspected to have signs. They contacted one of our GFP officials, whether it be a district office, myself, CEO, and we entered in this into our database to keep track of it. So this was established, I think, in the 90s. And I kind of inherited that data set, but all they are opportunistic reports, based on what somebody saw that might have reflected what an otter was. And then, like I say, we go through all these reports and we verify the validity of it. You know, there, a lot of times otters are mistaken for, say, muskrats, beavers in particular. So we want to make sure that what people are actually thinking is an otter actually is an otter, because it just helps us track the distribution, occurrence, all that sort of stuff that much better and more accurately.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Alex.
I'm sure. So real quick question, Alex, when you record Commissioner Watkins' observation, will that be a probable or a verified?
I did tell him I had to make it probably because he did not have a picture.
I had a pick on him. Madam Chair, number 11 in your book would be the official action sheet for the river otter season. As Alex indicated, we don't have any recommended changes for you. This would be for the 2023 and 24 seasons. Open in those open units, those counties associated with the Big Sioux, the Vermilion, James River watersheds, limited to one otter per season. On that next page there, you can see the gray shaded counties will be those that are available to those members of the public pursuing otters open. You can see the harvests there predominantly in the Big Sioux, up in the Low Minnesota, up in Roberts County, and some of those tributaries associated, I believe, with the Whetstone and Yellow Bank there in Grant and Doolittle County. So with that, Madam Chair, we have no recommended changes. There's no action here needed unless you want to make a change. And I would encourage anybody that wants to hop out with Alex or any of our staff members doing that survey in September, not October, float down a kayak and learn how to identify a river otter poo. Alex and staff are getting pretty good at it, so it'd be a pretty neat experience.
Yeah. Because there are no changes, we do not need to take action, commissioners, unless someone on the commission feels that changes are needed. All right, very good. Thank you.